Welcome to our podcast, Kuehne+Nagel Shipping Insights, Sea Freight News and Supply Chain Solutions. My name is Sarah Vollmer, and I'm pleased to be your host today. Sea Freight has been a part of me for over 18 years, and I currently serve as Vice President, Sea Freight Go-to-Market Strategy for Kuehne+Nagel in New York. The logistics and supply chain industry has been experiencing exciting times, and we have witnessed heightened global awareness of our industry since the onset of the pandemic in 2020. Our podcasts are aimed at not only providing information, but also offering insights for navigating these exciting times from a group of our experts. On today's episode, The Unreliable Touchpoints, Managing Today's Supply Chain Challenges. With me, I have Mr. Caspar Ellerbach, Senior Vice President, Sea Logistics, Asia Pacific. Caspar, how are you?
I'm good, Sarah. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. It's been a minute since I've actually got to see you. It's kind of been the topic lately with everybody. It's 18 months or 19 months probably and counting now.
It has. You know, coming from a life where you used to travel 200 days a year to living your life through Zoom, it's very special.
That's true. It's definitely a different world that we've all been living in. And not only from a personal perspective, but of course, from our industry perspective as well, right? I think, you know, we've all talked about ad nauseum, the effects that the pandemic and COVID-19 has had within supply chains. But, you know, today I know we really wanted to talk a little bit more about some certain examples, which have been quite impactful within our business and how we as a company are trying to help to overcome some of these challenges with our customers. So let's go ahead and let's get started and let's talk about kind of the elephant in the room, so to say, that we have. How many touch points are there, Caspar? 15, 17, 18, 19? What do you think?
I mean, our normal reference to this would be 18 touch points, all varying in reliability. I'd say we're probably adding a couple of additional touch points in the current world of COVID.
Okay, so for our listeners out there that, you know, I think sometimes we get very used to our own internal jargon and what we're talking about. What's a touch point, by the way, just before we go any deeper on this?
Well, touch point would be, you know, a handover of cargo, for instance, but it could also be handover of intelligence or intel. So, for instance, when we pick up a container from a factory in Asia, that would, of course, be a touch point and a handover in the process. Each of these touch points or links will, as mentioned before, offer a varying degree of reliability. And of course, in the current world where it has become the norm that global shipping and schedule reliability is hovering around 35% with an average delay of 7 days globally, that of course has, you know, a ripple effect in the reliability of each of these touch points.
35%, wow, that's pretty good. You know, as you know, I'm based here in the States, and I think we're about, you know, 10% here. So I think everybody out there, US-based, would take another 20 basis points if they could. But no, absolutely, it's definitely one of those things. But I want to circle back. You had mentioned that there's probably a couple new touch points, perhaps, that you would add. What would be one of those touch points or those touch points that you were referencing?
Well, I think when you look at what has been going on, I'm sure you've covered that in other podcasts, but what has been happening in the industry is, of course, that there has been a challenge in where the equipment or the carrier equipment, i.e. the containers, have been positioned around the world, which of course means that in particular in Asia, we've had issues with container equipment, which for a lot of cases means that we can get a booking confirmation, but we will have to wait very, very long for the equipment release from the different depots or the different terminals. Sometimes, you know, a booking will be confirmed, but the equipment will not be available, adding another level of challenges for our operators on the ground in Asia. And of course, that's difficult to understand. You can actually have a confirmation for a booking, but you don't have any equipment to feed that booking confirmation.
Well, I mean, in layman's terms, right, for some of our listeners, I mean, you could kind of equate that to booking an airline ticket, right? And then not having a seat, so to say.
Well, I guess you can book an airline ticket. You can be on the plane, but you don't have a seat. Yeah.
Okay.
That would kind of be the equation, I guess.
I think that
you can stand up.
Ooh, you know, some airlines might be trying to go to that. So, gosh.
Yeah, I don't think that's safe.
No, probably not. Okay. So how are our folks, you know, handling this? And more importantly as well is the booking confirmation, right, that you're speaking of. How do we talk to our customers about that? And what's, you know, how do they receive that information? How do they interpret that information?
Well, again, it's been a bit of a journey. I think when you look back a year and a half, you know, the initial phases where we were challenged with equipment, and then of course all the ripple effects of the Suez situation and of course the port situation in South China. Given the fact that my mother, who is 82, is aware of the shipping crisis at the moment, I would argue that any educated customer is well aware that there is a challenge on the ground. Of course, that doesn't mean that you know there's an acceptance around this. It's tough. It's challenging. You have an agreement that you want to live up to. But I think to the most part, our customers are well educated on this point now, understanding that you know shipping is a challenging world at the moment. We have customers that of course understand that there is delays in transit. We also have customers that are very reluctant to accept that there will be delays when you hit the US West Coast. But I think anybody with access to Google will realize that 60 plus vessels plowed outside of the port of Los Angeles, waiting for up to 2 weeks, will have a ripple effect on your supply chain and delays subsequent to that. But it's been a challenge, and it's really been a learning curve for everyone, right? We've learned as we went along. I think no one really understood. Of course, you could sort of try and make ends meet and try and connect the dots. We all tried to estimate, you know, what did the Suez actually have of impact to global shipping in regards to equipment repositioning, etc.
Right.
But just how bad it was, and of course the fact that you then get the aftershocks of port shutdowns in South China and later on partly in the terminal in Ningbo, it has a ripple effect. And what we're seeing is that small incidents like, you know, the seasonal weather issues that we're faced with in Asia at the moment, small things that would historically not have a dramatic impact on your supply chain are really to a certain degree crippling it, because it's already a very, very tight situation. So I think what we're dealing with in our daily lives as a logistics operator in Asia is of course to try and ensure that our you know, expectation management between our customers and what is available in the market is in line and is in check. It is not the usual service levels that we would normally pride and honor ourselves with, but it is unfortunately the market situation. And of course, that's very tough for a lot of our operators that are used to having very happy customers on the other end. But we're dealing with customers that have to explain delays and to maybe even departments that might not be as well educated as them in the world of shipping. And it's a challenge. It's very challenging.
Okay, right. We've talked about that here with some other episodes as well. You know, when you really get into, of course, you mentioned the Suez incident, and I think that was really the impetus that really put our industry on the map globally. And as you gave as an example, your 82-year-old mother understanding now kind of what you do and the impacts that it has. You know, we've touched a lot of things, and I think also we know a lot of transportation managers, logistics managers, folks that we talk to on a regular basis are now having to answer to the C-suite, as an example, the CFOs of the world, to try to explain the situation, explain that there are a variety of impacts, from a financial impact to a product impact, you name it. And it's really, you know, because we have such a juxtaposition within our world, right? There's a lack of reliability. There's a lack of transparency, lack of accessibility, you know, with some of everything that we do. So, you know, you mentioned that people are having these conversations with customers, and, you know, what are some of the ways and what are some of the benefits, I would say, that you have seen with your team of being able to have these conversations and being able to explain it in a way that, you know, customers understand? I think, yeah, I think a lot of people right now, they've got some angry folks on the other line. So how is everyone dealing with this? Sorry for the long-winded question, but I'll let you have it now.
Well, I'll try and take the long-winded question and answer it in a short way. As I said before, I think the recent news that I saw on my phone this morning was the BBC was reporting on the port situation in Los Angeles. And I would argue that BBC is not normally where I pick up my shipping news. And that effectively means that no, it's not. These type stories would normally not hit BBC. But I do think that that's part of the answer to your question. That even folks or people that are not normally involved in supply chain matters are feeling the repercussions of the current situation. I think that most customers will be dealing with a situation where their cost of shipping has at least doubled. There are some that would face situations, depending of course on your size, that will see their cost of shipping probably times 10. I wouldn't be surprised about that, depending again on your size. And of course that means that it will have the attention of anyone who's procuring elsewhere and selling elsewhere, right? Explaining the situation to people is not necessarily easy. I think that the situation around the fact that you are ending up paying a monster premium in the current market circumstances, and actually you're getting a service level that is subpar of what you would normally get. Anyone that uses Uber or Grab would argue with me that if you're, you know, booking a car and you only get to get a car arriving in 35% of the cases, and the ones that are late will be 7 days late, at some point you would stop driving with Uber and you would buy your own car. Right?
Yeah, no.
So I think it's fairly simple. I think people understand it. They understand what is going on. There is a lot of anger in the industry, of course, but. You know, the market circumstances are what they are at the moment, and it will take a while before things ease up. What we're seeing from our customer side is that despite what a lot of product offerings are being made on is of course visibility helps you. Visibility can enhance your safety zone in regards to managing your supply chain.
Right.
But it will not airlift a container off a container vessel that is stuck outside Los Angeles.
You mean you can't send a helicopter out to get a box?
No, it's a challenge, Sarah. I would argue if the container is stacked up top, it might be plausible, but I would argue it's probably not the smartest thing to do. But the fact of the matter is, of course, that visibility and honesty in the supply chain, we're pretty clear with our customers on how things look, which means that we're doing our very best to ensure that our predictive index on arrival dates and the predictions around delays in regards to port turnarounds and inland moves will of course enhance your visibility. But the fact of the matter is that for most of the trades that we're dealing with, the stock levels have been depleting.
Right.
And so the product that is coming in, you know, that has to go under the Christmas tree at the moment. So it is uber important. But that's where, again, you need to make sure that you are articulating this to our customers. And of course, that's what we're doing to ensure that the product that is absolutely required to be on time, well, then there are other products like sea air and air freight that, of course, can alleviate that to a certain degree.
Right, right. Okay. Do you feel that, you know, as a global logistics provider, an NVO, that we have an advantage over some of our competition, especially from a, let's just call it a direct carrier perspective, that we can provide to customers in these types of situations?
It's a difficult question. I would argue that what we're seeing in the market is that there is a there's a very broad market, right? I think there's been references to the fact that even the market has now its own sort of drive, because you can argue if you're a large customer and of course your cost has doubled based on the fact that you have long-term commitments that are partly being fulfilled and you're still lifting part on spot, versus a small customer in the same segment that of course will see a multiplier of 10 in terms of cost to ship. whether or not you carry that cost to serve into your cost of goods sold to your customers, that's then the question mark. I would argue that most large retailers or whatnot would not do so, and of course that gives them a competitive advantage in the market.
Sure, but with that, and in my previous life, one of mine, I was in retail, and margin erosion can only be sustained for so long, right? And we have seen that. We have seen specifically some of our larger customers, as you say, really because they need to have product on the shelves because it's back to school or it's holiday or Father's Day, whatever it might be, they need to have product to sell. So they're willing to pay. But we've seen then the flip side of that, of where there's the smaller customers who say, I just can't afford to do that.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying, right? That the larger players would have a competitive advantage at the moment because of course the it's a volume game. What we see in the market, and back to your question in regards to the everlasting conundrum of carrier direct versus NVOCC, I think that a very large base of customers would find that in the current circumstances, not really related to rate levels, but simply related to service levels. Mm-hmm. You can't bet on the supply chain game at the moment on one or two horses. You simply need a multitude of options to be able to cater to your supply chain if you need on-time delivery, or at least somewhat close to on-time delivery.
Right.
And the reason for that is that most vessels, depending on which alliance you're in, you will have slidings, you'll have delays. Historically, we would look at a week, but now we have to look at a vessel because the vessel will move on a weekly basis. You can argue that with a week delay in any given port pair, it doesn't really make sense to look at a week any longer. So you have to look at an individual vessel. So if you tied your supply chain strategy up around two shipping lines, you are likely going to be suffering a bit because there will be weeks where you simply don't have any vessels arriving. So having an out where you say, well, at least a part of my supply chain I will manage through an NVOCC with a multitude of carriers underlying that agreement, we're seeing a very big interest in it at the moment to at least manage your risk performance in that regard.
Right. So talking, it's really about flexibility at the end of the day, right? And how much, if I'm a shipper, how much do I want to hedge on here? But I want to be able to have a few players in my pocket so that if, there's 66 vessels outside of the port of Long Beach, Los Angeles, I have some other options, whether it's a different carrier, a different routing, utilizing an East Coast, U.S. East Coast service as an example, so on and so on. Okay, interesting. So, we kind of gone into a little bit of the market situation, and I think we both can agree that disruptions are here to stay, both planned and unplanned. And I think the wave that we have, is you touched upon it very early in our conversation, was that even a small, or what used to be a small disruption, such as a weather incident, has become a very, very large impact and or disruption to one's supply chain. But let's pivot. I want to go a little bit deeper. You mentioned a little bit about customer service and the levels of customer service. And, right now, perhaps I think we joked earlier that, is there champagne and caviar customer service out there? And given the market challenges, of course, that we just touched upon for some time, how can we deliver, get back to that point of, Dom Perignon and caviar type of experience for customers when we have all these different challenges? Can you touch upon a little bit about that?
Well, I think caviar and champagne service is of course challenging in shipping at the moment. That's a given. I would argue that customer service is all about expectation management. Mm-hmm. The times where I have been personally impressed by customer service is 9 times out of 10, a service level that was not expected, that was fulfilled. And the challenge with that is, of course, that the next time I'm engaged with that, if it's a aircraft carrier or a hotel, that becomes the new expectation level, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's a glass of champagne when you board a plane, or it's a bottle of water, whatever the thing is, that becomes the new norm.
Right.
What I also think, to be honest, that the current situation is offering is that we're level setting expectations to a certain degree. So that means that even if I, as a procurement manager with one of our customers, would like my product to be on time based on the original scheduled transit times, I also know that the likelihood of that is very, very low. So that effectively means that you've lowered the bar, yes, because of course the service levels are simply different at the moment. Kühne+Nagel's a big company, we are the largest MBOCC around, but that does not mean that we can make vessels, get in front of a queue in Los Angeles.
But oh, would that be nice if we could?
That would be amazing, yes. But unfortunately, that's not in the cards. But what we can give our customers is, of course, the insurance that they know exactly when product will likely arrive, and we will be available to, of course, go above and beyond. We've seen in Asia, I don't want to go through a lot of stories on this, but it's clear that as any other provider of services in Asia, we've gone through varying degrees, and we are still at the moment going through various degrees of COVID lockdowns in Asia. Of course, the worst one initially was what we were facing with in India, but currently Vietnam is also still on lockdown. It's looking better, but it's a challenge. To serve our customers with teams that are on site, that are working basically day and night with our customers to ensure that their product is moved, I think is on a weekly basis. Not only do we get commendation or recommendation from our customers and applause from our customers that we're doing a good job, of course we are also getting it from our employees, whom of course are going through a very, very traumatic situation, but at right. the same time they're also burning the midnight oil to ensure that the customer requirements are at least trying to be fulfilled. It's not perfect, and of course it's a far cry from what we would normally call great customer service, but I think in the current circumstances, I think we're doing a pretty good job.
Well, that's great, and to hear about our folks really going above and beyond, as you said, and really putting their own sacrifices, their personal sacrifices, on the side and doing what they can for our customers. I think it's a really big story with that. And it hasn't been easy, right? At the end of the day, I could only imagine if, living at a facility for 2 weeks at a time, not seeing your family and working 24/7 for probably what it feels like, it is quite some task. And I think those people should really be applauded at the end of the day. And I know you feel the same way here for really stepping up to this challenge.
100%. The situation has really been astounding, right? From worry of people's health, which of course is still very much so a concern, but also just looking at all of the amazing stories that came out of this. We talked a lot and of course rolled out a global care program. We've been talking about customer service program, and of course we've been dividing the organization to ensure that customer service was a major enhancement done over the last couple of years. But really seeing it in action under live fire
right.
galore, which I would call it now, has just been absolutely tremendous. And of course, from a management perspective, you cannot verbalize a thank you to the team like we've done. That for me is almost hollow. But what I would emphasize is that the feedback that we're getting from our customers, that's straight to the heart of the employees. At least that's my view on it. So I think there's been a lot of new partnerships formed over the course of the situation. It goes without saying that the customers that we have been managing before that of course were the ones that we initially did everything to ensure that we looked after during this situation, right? To make sure that they made it through the current crisis, and the feedback has been tremendous. Of course, it's not again the service levels we would normally cater to the market, but unfortunately it is the market circumstances. And back to the 18 touch points or 19 or 20 touch points, depending on how you count it, they haven't gotten more reliable, right?
Right.
Which de facto means that communication is probably the most important factor. We've done a lot globally, not just in Asia, to ensure that we're in investing in people frontline that are able to pick up the phone and actually there right. physically to speak to our customers. Maybe not physically in places where COVID is hindering this, but at least we have been there to ensure that there was a answer to the questions that were raised throughout this process. And that I think has been a major driver of the success that we have seen over the last year and a half. But again, it's not success for me. You know, we've struggled through. It's a tough period, and I think we're all humbled by the amount of work that's going into the work from the different countries globally. Mm-hmm. And I think we from a company perspective can only be proud of the fact that we're servicing our customers through this difficult time.
Absolutely. So, you know, with that being said, where do we go from here? What's next?
That's a good question, Sarah. And it's the million-dollar question, I guess, on everyone's mind. You know, depending on which trade you're in, you know, the normal contract seasons for some of the trades will start around about now. So, of course, it's very fresh in people's mind in regards right. to what's going on next year. Without disclosing too much, I think there's a lot wiser people on various different media streams that are outlining this, but I do not foresee a monster change in the current scenario that we're seeing today in 2022. So I think what our customers need to embrace themselves or brace themselves for is really to have a plan A, B, and C, and D, and maybe an X. And to ensure that they can cater to the demands of their customers.
Well, it also sounds like from what you said before, right? Be able to be flexible, right? Have that flexibility as much as you can within your supply chain, but then also that partnership aspect, right? That you touched upon a little bit. And, you know, it's not always possible to go above and beyond and, you know, for every single customer. But I think at the end of the day, it's really about picking partners and picking providers, which become partners, right, who you can really rely upon and have that open communication with and have that dialogue and have these honest discussions about what's really going on in the market and what is possible, right? It's that managing of expectations, as you mentioned earlier in our conversation.
It's tough talk.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's tough
not
talk.
An easy
it's
conversation.
Not,
yeah.
No, it's not. It's not. It's very, very difficult. And to be honest, it doesn't get any easier because we all know that you know the person that I'm informing from our customer side, well, he has a lot of stakeholders. He has some customers that he's needing to fulfill his requirements, and of course it's difficult. I think what we need to do in situations like this is that we don't make it more difficult than it has to be. What
okay.
I mean with that is
yeah, definitely. What expand on that, please?
Well, you know, it's very similar to one's private life, right? If you have a tough message to deliver, it doesn't help if your wife or your partner or whatnot is screaming at you. it doesn't make the delivery easier. So I think it's extremely important that we're emphasizing the open relationship in this regard because it kind of is what it is at the moment. We just have to suffer through. But I think that going above and beyond for customers, you know, that's of course what we're all looking for. The key is that we are at least seeing, we're level setting our expectations from both ends, right? Because if you go into contract season 2022 and you believe that it's going to be the same as what you were faced with in 2019,
right.
because now COVID is over. Then of course we're never going to find equal footing. Not talking about rate levels because that's not the point of this
right.
podcast. But in regards to service levels, I think it's important that those expectations are level set. We've still seen RFQs coming through from certain customers that are expecting on-time delivery, and there will be penalties subsequent to not meeting these requirements if you are late with more than 2 days.
Right.
And sorry,
I've seen a few of those. Yep. Uh-huh.
If the global average is 7 days delay, you know, it's going to be difficult for us to agree to these terms. So it's really about making sure that we're seeing eye to eye on what is feasible and what is not.
Okay. All right. Lots of good pieces of advice. Any one last final comment here before we wrap up today?
Okay. I think what we're all hopeful is the development on terminal expansions, so the infrastructure in basically around the world.
Right.
There's been a lot of shipping lines that have called out to governments to ensure that the terminals are improving.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a US phenomenon, right?
No, it's not.
It's across the world. There's that. Of course, there is a certain concern around a certain negotiation coming up in the US, which of course would be on everyone's mind.
And if it's not on everyone's mind, it should be on everybody's mind here.
It definitely should be. I mean, we're currently seeing basically the same situation as what we saw in 2015, I believe it was, Sarah.
Right.
Where we had the last strike on West Coast.
It wasn't a strike. It was a slowdown.
Very sorry. But I think those are two key items to look out for. Apart from that, of course, stay close to the market news. And we're all hopeful that the vessels will stay clear of the shores through Suez. But I do think that the last situations that we've seen in Asia in regards to port shutdowns is quite concerning, and of mm-hmm. course something we're keeping a very close eye on. Again, nothing you can really do about it other than to make sure that you plan for the worst and hope for the best in your supply chain delivery.
All right, great. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to our latest podcast episode, The Unreliable Touchpoints, Managing Today's Supply Chain Challenges. Casper, I thank you very much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to chat with us.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And everybody, be sure to check out and tune into our next episode.